questions. As a reminder, please be aware that if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the Light a Candle podcast. Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting podcast. Visit our website at oalaig.org, where you will find several speaker feeds with over 800 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed on the Light a Candle podcast are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Casey.
Yay. I'm Casey, a compulsive eater and anorexic.
Hi.
Grateful to be here. I haven't spoken at this meeting in many years, and since it's being recorded, my name is really unique, so I choose to use my dog's name to just, I'd rather be able to let it bear it all as opposed to, you know, feeling vulnerable on the internet for work purposes. So, going to ask God to speak through me. I had a great program day today, I just want to say. I had a day I was sharing with a friend about the power of fellowship, and today I do it twice a year. I get together with my sponsees and their sponsees and their sponsees, and we had it at one of my sponsees' house today, and it was so beautiful. And then knowing I was coming here tonight, no surprise, like double-ended, full-blown program, I feel super balanced today. Like, that's what happens, like a hand in everyone. So I have photos. I'll pass them around. I found that very powerful when I was new. I've been in program. I've been coming for over 30 years. And I guess this last year I celebrated 28 years of abstinence. I am a 100-pounder. I'm a compulsive eater and anorexic. And I know the shame and pain of carrying 100 pounds or more. How I dealt with emotion and life in general growing up in alcoholism was I chose to use food as a solace. And then when I discovered dieting, it was also dieting. So I had the pattern early on. I think I started compulsively overeating at age 11. And I had the pattern of gaining vast amounts of weight really quickly. And then I'd go on these crash diets and lose, you know, 80, 90, 100 pounds at a time in like 4 or 5 months, 6 months. So within a year span, like, people couldn't recognize me. And I just did that for years over and over. And I know the shame and pain of, you know, growing up with a lot of weight on me, being called thunder thighs in school, and shamefully going to the grocery store and just overbuying food and holding up at home. And I have so much compassion for that little girl that used food like that. And I actually first came into OA when I was 15, so it was a long time ago. I'm 57 now. So I first came in, and I grew up in a small town in Colorado, and it was, it's amazing, like, how resourceful we are as addicts. Like, I have no idea how I found all the diets that I could, and, you know, all the crazy schemes, and how I even found OA, like, so way pre-internet, social media. But I found an OA meeting, and at that point, actually, I was really practicing anorexia, which was my tool how to deal with compulsive eating. So I'd come out of a brief hospital stay from anorexia, and I started gaining weight again. And so I found an OA meeting, and it was a small town in Colorado, and there were, you know, 4 or 5 people in the room, and one of them was the wife of my ski coach, and she had this sanity look in her eye, and I was just shocked and intrigued, and I also just didn't believe it. I was like, really? But what I heard in there was, people eating the way that I was eating and abusing food, and that they didn't do it anymore. And then there were some people in the room who were still struggling with it. And this book, this AA 12 and 12 that I brought, I bought that day in the room. Like, this is a really old 12 and 12, and I still have it. And it's just like, I think if, God forbid, like, my house was ever burning down, this is probably one of the things I would grab. And, you know, I took this book home, and, you know, I was 15. I just, you know, it was just too complex for me. I had a lot more dieting to do. I had a lot more abusing food and laxatives and, I wasn't done. So I came back into OA on my knees in my late 20s, and I'd lost my job. I couldn't clean my apartment. I was just leaving the house to go get food, coming back. And but I wasn't at my top weight. I was actually at my top, like, laxative abuse and colonic abuse. I was just, it was that thing, you know, my sponsor, my old sponsor a long time, she used to talk about that thing when it's like, it's not even working anymore, and she was crying, growing to the grocery store, but still doing it. And I was at that point. Like, I just was like, I had to do it, but there was no space in between of it not even working anymore. So I started coming back to OA meetings, and that's where it started. So I came to OA for like a year. I didn't get a sponsor because I still wanted it to be a, like, home study program. And but I kept coming, and you guys kept welcoming me. And my home meeting was in West Hollywood. It was at the time the Gay and Lesbian Center in West Hollywood on a Tuesday or Thursday night. And I, because it was my way home from where I was working at the time, and I just was like, this felt really good. Like, people were welcoming there. And so I came for a year, and then finally I had the willingness to get a sponsor, and that's where, like, everything came alive. And I had no interest in giving up the way I was eating, but I wanted to be here. And that's what's so magical about OA. Like, even if we have no interest of giving up our behaviors, we're not kicked out here. There's no, like, rules. We're, like, we just love on the newcomer. And I was loved on. I was just, like, welcomed, and people would call, and I'd call people, and I started to develop a community. And so I really debated step one with my sponsor. And, but I was able to figure out an abstinence in the beginning that was doable, like 3 meals a day. And she was like, it's okay if it's a mountain a meal, you know, but it's 3 times a day. And I lost weight on that because my body was so craving regularity. Like, I think those of us that abuse food, I don't have to go into the foodalog for you. You know, if you're here or anyone listening, we probably have done it all. But and that was when, like, I'd sit in the park with her and do the step work, and things just magically happened. Like, I took the action that I did not yet believe in, and life unfolded. Like, I've learned how to do everything in my adulthood in OA, and I've just been carried through. It's amazing. And gone through all of the dark stuff that happens with being on the planet for a few decades, and all of the wonderful things. Like, the 12 steps, when I finally admitted the powerlessness over my disease and the unmanageability of my life, you know, and sitting in the park and debating that higher power, and then, like, just little by little making the decision to turn my will and my life over to God, completely imperfectly. Like, I've done this all so imperfectly, but I've kept coming back. And I'm so grateful to still be here, because those of us that have been around, we've seen a lot of people come and go, you know. I've known people that have died. I know, you know, people that don't need this program and their lives get great. More power to them. But it's just like, like at this point, 30 years in, I'm in acceptance that, like, I'll die with this disease, but I don't want to die of it. And those are my choices, like, to show up. And so it's been very interesting the last few years. Like, so in the first chunk of years, I would just do 3 mountains a day, work the steps, go to meetings, get immersed in the herd, and I felt so much more a part of life. And then something happened. My sponsor left OA. I still called her my sponsor because I have a disease, right? And my food got bigger. I needed a different sponsor, obviously. So I found a sponsor who really took me through the big book, and that's when things really evolved. And she also suggested that I identify my alcoholic foods, which I did over 25 years ago. And there's a handful of foods I haven't touched in 25 years. So that was when a deeper freedom happened at that time in my life. And I let go of the rest of the weight that I was holding, and I experienced a new kind of freedom, being sober in a new way on the food aspect. But she told me something that I still practice today, which is, you know, like, get in the middle of the herd and, like, have your hand in sponsor, hand in sponsee. And so, like, today was one of those days where, like, I was at one of my sponsee's house and we were all there. And, you know, it was like, we call it generations. It's like the lineage, because that's not the type of lineage I learned growing up in my household. And it left me feeling really empty in that household. But in here, like, I have a family that is so amazing that I just never would have dreamed of. And eventually, like, going through the big book with my sponsor at that time, letting go of my alcoholic foods, it really brought me to a new place. And then I had to seek, like, other rooms with an A on the end to need help with relationships, the people program, and, you know, that would really open the door where I, like, learned how to make better choices of in my work life and in my friend life and in my romantic life. I started choosing differently, and lo and behold, I'm sitting here like a married woman since 2009. I've been with my husband for 17 years, and it was never on my radar that I even wanted to be married, you know, and I still am astounded. I mean, he's a complete normie, but he knows my program comes first, too, and I'm super grateful for the 12 steps, because that, it shows me how to do all these aspects. So there were times, I just want to talk about, like, what's happened now, because there's a big transformation, a lot has happened in the last few years through the pandemic. And something started to happen, it was probably 5 or 6 years ago, where having abstained from my alcoholic foods and getting older, the food got smaller and the anorexia kicked in, you know. And it was so subtle, and it was very tricky being in Overeaters Anonymous at that time. Because, you know, as you know, those listening on the podcast, you can't see my photos, but, you know, I am over 100 pounds down from my top weight. So having a large weight loss and truly being a compulsive eater and then having the weight loss, you know, I had felt that this limited food plan and a big weight loss was somewhat revered in OA. And it's tricky when you have an anorexic mind like myself. It's really, really tricky. And so I just slipped into not feeding myself as nourishing as, you know, and figuring this out on my own. And then the pandemic hit. I got COVID in February 2020 when all of us didn't really know what it was. And I was really, really sick. And then about, it was months later, I started getting these really weird symptoms with my body. And it took a long time to figure out what was going on, but there was a chronic illness that eventually, you know, came to, and I got really, really ill. And the illness also was like an appetite suppressant, so it was a horrible cocktail for the anorexia already brewing. And I got really thin, and you guys didn't see me because we were all on Zoom, you know. And my isolation, and, you know, we all know, it's a really crazy time. Like, and so I finally got diagnosed, and I have a chronic illness that was spawned by, you know, COVID. It was there, laying dormant, and I was fine, but COVID really kicked it in. And finally, I got medical help, and but it had already gotten my heart, and I was really ill. So just to get current and how that ties into Overeaters Anonymous and the 12 steps is I knew from being here that all the stuff that, you know, we've heard over and over, like, I remember someone saying, I have a disease that tells me I don't have a disease. So I knew I wasn't seeing straight, thinking straight. My family almost did an intervention. It's just like 2021. And my husband, my sisters were just like, what is going on? And it was also kicked in from the illness. And I really had to do things a different way. And I also really had to come to that I needed different help in addition to OA. And I went to other rooms that deal specifically with anorexia. But, you know, I wrote it down too, because there's a member in our program that I just adore. And he says, you know, growing up in dysfunctional homes, and for him being a recovering anorexic, he said, I was programmed by carrying the emotional weight of my abuser. So my own weight was repulsive to me. And I thought that was so interesting. You know, I'd hear anorexics speak, talk about the repulsiveness of having any extra weight. And being a 100-pounder, of that reverberation trauma, like remembrance of that, I was like, I'd rather die than put on weight. So I really sought outside help. I sought outside help with doctors, you know, in terms of outside dietitians, and started eating a different way. And it was a really hard time for me in OA because I also identify as a compulsive eater, right? So I would go to anorexia-based meetings and being really confused because I also know that adding more foods or eating some of my, quote, alcoholic foods triggers the phenomenon of craving for a compulsive overeater like me. So it's been a fascinating journey of a new type of surrender with a higher power. And it was almost like things were just evened out. And, you know, I heard someone say, time is not a tool. I love that. Like, oh yeah, I have, you know, when people are like, how much abstinence do you have? Well, I have 28 years from compulsive eating, but it's just today. I remember my sponsor used to be like, you know, whoever wakes up the earliest has the most abstinence. And it's true. Like, it's about my next thought. It's about, like, what am I doing right now? Well, all of us are in a meeting. If you're listening to the podcast, you're present with a meeting with all of us. And how beautiful is that? Like, that's what we have. And the anorexia, there's so many aspects to it that I've learned. And there's so many pieces of it that are medical that I didn't realize, too, in terms of, like, the starvation begets the starvation, and the brain doesn't function as well. So while that was happening, the denial was greater, and when I started doing some refeeding and really looking at this whole new unveiling of how do I fit OA into also being both. And I'm grateful to speak here tonight because since the pandemic, OA and our Zoom meetings, we have so many OAAB meetings online, like all over the world. And there's like this whole like resurgence of people that are coming out and looking at both sides of the disease and how to get to the same solution, which is basically 100% surrender and God's in charge. And I'm back in the steps right now, and like for all the years that I've kept coming back to OA, there are some things that I do consistently. I reach out to people, I go to meetings, I love meetings. I have sponsors. I'm never not sponsored. I have sponsees. I do service. And I'm here. Like, I'm a member. That's the most important thing. I reach out to newcomers. That always helps me. But my biggest tool that is, like, the biggest procrastinator, I feel, and I'll wrap up, is step work. I've always been, like, the slowest. I do a 10-step every night, but, like, the slowest of the slow. So, finally, with a girlfriend and with Zoom, she lives in New York now, but I'm like, let's do a weekly step meeting. So we just get online together, do 20 minutes a week of step work. That's it. And within this time of months, I've gotten 10, 11, and 12 done. Just doing 20 minutes a week. It's like what I say to sponsees. But, so I'm going to read this because I read it this week. And it says, and it's step 12 and the age 12 and 12. And for anyone who has studied this book, we all know this chapter is chock full. It's so long. And I had to take like 3 weeks to reread it because there was so much here I was distracting. If we really depend upon God, we couldn't very well play God to our fellows, nor would we feel the urge wholly to rely on human protection and care. And, you know, it was that line that really, really spoke to me this week. And we found freedom from fear was more important than freedom from want. And, you know, if I really depend on God, and sometimes it's so sloppy, you know, and it's so different. And the real surrender for me, because, like, I worked OA and had a food plan for so long that was, you know, rock solid, and I was free from compulsive eating. But when it morphs into anorexia, what is my freedom now? And hearing people talk about, you know, people that have inspired me, that, you know, someone may get freedom from a plan that is more like rules, but, you know, she gets freedom from expanding and opening up her food. And for a compulsive overeater like me, I'm like, how the frick does that work, you know? And that is the crux of a real surrender. Do I trust God or not? Like, I'm almost 60 years old, and I never thought I'd be in a place where my family 2 years ago was doing a, like, worried about me. And when I really learned the depths of anorexia, especially being older, and that it's healthier to have a little body weight on you, it completely shook everything of what I think I knew. And it was the real, like, the essence of the set-aside prayer. God, please help me set aside everything I think I know. Everything. And so during this time period, I felt astray from OA because I was like, oh my God, is that reinforcing the restriction for me because I've lost so much weight? And what happened, as it always is God reframed it for me, really reframed it. And, you know, that other thing that I've heard people say is being human is not a character defect, you know, just because, like, I may know some of the stuff in the literature and where it is and how it works. Like, I'm still just a human being going through the experience of yet another growth opportunity. And I'm so grateful, you know, for OA. And, you know, I rarely bring notes, but there were some things that, you know, I needed, like, I on Zoom, I think we all have appreciated this too. Like, I have this little file, like, when I hear people say something, I put it in there, and in a weak moment, I'll go and, like, look at that thing. And, you know, when I've heard, you know, recovering anorexics say they get surrendered by being full 3 times a day, you know, from 3 nourishing meals, it totally freaks me out because I'm a compulsive eater and I'd rather be under the bar, you know? And, again, it's about, like, surrendering. It says in the big book, when we need outside help to help us, I've been doing that. When I really don't know, I get to lean on God, and God always shows me. So I'm super grateful to be here today. Like, the topic with my sponsees and their sponsees today was gratitude, you know, being the holidays. And I'm so grateful we're back in person. I still have to wear a mask everywhere because of my health condition, but I just don't care what people think, you know. And I am so grateful to be alive. I'm grateful the steps have never failed me. I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams. I do. Like, there are so many things in my life I look at. And there are so many things, like, you know, when we plan, God laughs. You know, it's so true. Like, did I think this is what I'd be sharing in an OA meeting 30 years later? No. But it is. And I'm grateful to be here and not hide and, you know, hopefully to share will help someone that might be struggling with both sides of the disease. And we have so many resources online for anyone listening around the world. And, you know, we're not alone. You know, it's just like same disease, different symptom, and same solution. So I think I'll stop there. And that's it. Thank you. So do I take questions? Okay. What? Okay. Okay. So does anyone have a question?
I'm just going to ask how you deal with body dysmorphia.
Okay, the question is, how do I deal with body dysmorphia? That's a great question. To know that what has been said to me is put on clothes, often don't look in the mirror, stay off the scale, and there are days where I still, like, I know that basically my thinking is completely whacked and not real, when, like, the day before I was totally fine, the next day I see completely different thing. So I actually, what helps me the most is actually to call newcomers and talk to a sponsee and get off myself. And I remember people just saying, put on your clothes and get in the car, you know. So one thing my previous, one of my first sponsors said, you know, she was saying, like, that freedom from our body. Like, who am I to insult this beautiful thigh that God gave me? Like, who am I to insult that? And that has helped me time and time again, just the real surrender to my body is God's body.
Thank you so much. I was wondering if you could talk more about, you mentioned, like, before program, like, not having a clean apartment, all those things, and then, you know, being in program, being in action, and then having a chronic illness. I was wondering if you could talk more about how you find balance, like, staying in action, but also like the easy does it. Like, how do you be gentle with yourself, but also be, I guess, accountable?
That's a great question. So I'll try to summarize. Before program, when I talked about not being able to clean my apartment, and then now having to do actions, but also having a chronic illness. So how do I be accountable, but have the balance? It's funny because, you know, because I'm an isolator, there's a thing that I've been directed in my people program where it's like, when you want to say no, say yes, because I'd rather just say no, you know. But what I also have learned, and I actually did this very early on, like way before my illness, which was when I schedule something during the week, I schedule a lot less than I think that my brain wants to. And to have that empty time to be able to, if I'm feeling up for something, to do it. But my previous to program, I would just overschedule, exhaust, binge, and then sleep, basically. And now that I have an illness, another thing that I had to do, and I'm so grateful for, like, there's so many things on my gratitude list for my doctors, for medicines, for, you know, healers, all that stuff that have helped me. But when I was really, really feeling sick for a long period of time, I would say to all my friends, I'll make plans with you, but if I'm not able to do it, you have to understand. So I don't know if that answers it, but it's scheduling less, but also check in with God, when do I need to say yes and get out of my isolation, and to be able to decide things on the spur of the moment. Which is, you know, because the anorexia for me was all about control, the illusion of control. So when I really turn my life and my will over to God, I can, like a human being, see how I feel that day. 10 minutes left? Okay.
And Jessica. Thank you so much. I'm curious how the 12 steps and program changed your marriage.
Oh, okay. Yeah, the question is, how did the 12 steps change my marriage?
You did the 12 steps before your marriage, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so answer it however you want.
Okay. How did the 12 steps change? Okay, the 12 step changed my picker before I met my husband. So before that, I was picking really unhealthy, sometimes crazy people, sometimes not, but it felt very comfortable being in dysfunctional interactions because I was not. And I remember my sponsor said to me, the one who took me through the big book, she said, the person you're going to meet after working the steps, they'll be a completely different person because you'll be a different person. And that intrigued me. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. And also, you know, I came from like hardcore sponsorship in OA. There was like no dating first year of, you know, abstinence and like lots of things that kind of kept me on a tight leash, which was great for what I needed a long time ago. And so by the time I met my husband, I was at a deeper surrender, and how we practice it together, even though he's a normie, it's like he gets it from osmosis from me. And one thing that was the most important thing when I did meet him was that, like, the 12 steps and my program comes first before anything. So then I didn't have to negotiate. So he came into it, I came into it that way. And so I think it naturally works with both of us, even though he doesn't necessarily have a program.
And you talked about having more freedom and participating in life after doing the steps. So I was wondering if that brought up any emotions that you couldn't think about or handle when you were more focused on the food.
So the question is, having more freedom, participation in life, while in program, and did it bring?
Did that bring up any emotions that maybe were?
Oh yeah, yeah. Did it bring up emotions when versus when I was in the food? Yes. They say when our life gets bigger, you know, it's like, there's a great AA speaker, he says, you know, I have problems in areas that I didn't have areas before. And that is for certain. So, like, you know, I was just talking to some other fellows earlier, and we were talking about when there's the there, like, let me get this, you know. And it's like the illusion of when I was sitting on the couch binging my entire, like, teenage years, I'd have the fantasy of what life was going to be like. And then jumping into real life and having it different, you know, someone I heard today was talking about it's actually a lot easier. It gets so scary and big, I'd rather just revert back to a relapse, you know. And as opposed to, like, taking the time, like the earlier question, like, I have learned self-care in a whole new way of slowing down. And if something like socially, because I am really an introvert in a lot of ways, I get overwhelmed and overstimulated. I've learned in program too, like the first thing I do when I turn in, like walk into a social or work event or something, I turn my perfectionism over to God. And I allow myself, like I have humor now too, like, you know, to do it messy and imperfect. And that usually gives me the pass as opposed to like getting in my head about being a certain way. So I continuously learn now all the time of being out in life. There are new areas that I'm being out in life, you know, and the other place I go, it talks about do play, do have hobbies, do have fun. I was like, what's that? You know, I thought fun was like getting my list done and doing my taxes, you know, I mean, like literally I've had to learn what fun is because before off-gassing fun was sitting on the couch and eating. So, oh my God, the learning scale just continues.
Does food get any difficult, like more difficult around the holidays? And if it does, or maybe it did in the past, what are some tools?
Does food get difficult around the holidays? What are some tools? That's a great question. Yeah, and you know, one thing my sponsor a long time ago, she said, holiday food is going to look different. And I love that because it gives me the freedom to participate in whatever I'm going to or that I don't have to not participate because it has to be perfect. But the tools that I've always done is check in before and check after with a sponsor or, you know, another fellow. So I can bookend, like whether it be actual food or, you know, what I'm going to do, or a lot of times, like, I'm going to show up for 25 minutes, you know what I mean? Like, whatever that is, and to have a plan. Like, it's that old adage, like, fail the plan to fail, you know? That has always, always helped me.
Thank you so much. I want to get more into, like, do you ever struggle with your chronic illness just to get the energy and stamina to keep up with the best food possible? And, like, do you ever feel exhausted from your chronic illness where, you know, I don't know how to put it, like, it affects your program.
Do I ever feel exhausted from my chronic illness that affects my program? Yes. It limits my ability to get on the phone with people if I'm not feeling well. But in the beautiful days of Zoom, I could just like lay in my bed and sit on Zoom meetings. You know, that really helps me just plug in if I'm really feeling sick. But also, again, it's like turning over to God what my expectation of what it's supposed to look like. Like, there's always at least one program thing I can do a day. Always. Like, and if it's just one, if it's more than that, great. But it's also reframing what it may look like for that day. And to not isolate, because there's always a way, like, we live in a technical time where I can even just text a sponsor. I don't even need to get on the phone. So that is not as exhausting as maybe a phone call for me, you know? So it's just like little things like that.
Thank you.
reframing what it's supposed to look like.
Having been on both sides of the scale, like a sizable margin, would you find people treating you differently at different sizes? And if so, how do you feel emotionally?
Having been on both sides, literally, of the scale, did people treat me differently emotionally, and how did I deal with it? Honestly, in looking at it, the only person who really treated me differently was me. I could sit here and say people treated me differently when I was really overweight. I mean, you know, people treated me differently when I was, you know, in ninth grade, thunder thighs. Yeah, people like outwardly did that, but that hasn't happened literally outwardly since I was, you know, in grade school. Or so the biggest harsh treating differently is how I'm treating myself. So it's like, how am I switching on, like, what my self-treatment is? And I can walk into any room and be any size, and it doesn't matter. Like, that is what is totally the truth for me.
On walking that line between being a real truth of children here and being an anorexic, you said God gave you a reframe. Could you just repeat what the reframe was?
Being a compulsive overeater and anorexic, God gave me a reframe. I don't remember. let me just try to answer that before I wrap up. The reframe was humility, frankly, because I thought I knew, like, how to do this and what was going on and where it was going. And I was so humbled when, like, another aspect of the disease came up, that it's all about humility and relearning different ways, but still based on the steps and traditions. Like, I'm not going anywhere, thank God. And I'm super grateful for that. So I hope that helps. Thank you.
A suggested donation of $3.